You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Well, folks, as we chat on this Tuesday, the Golden State Warriors just swept the Spurs last night. So for a third consecutive year, the Warriors are going to the NBA Finals and have won the Western Conference. If you listen to this podcast, you know that in general, while I know it's not great from a fan standpoint from the league, I do think it's the best case result for the Rockets in terms of moving past what happened in Game 5 and Game 6 against San Antonio. I don't know if you want San Antonio to truly be competitive, because at that point, then yeah, maybe the narrative is you blew a golden opportunity. I think the narrative that's in place now, which is that there's a huge gap between the Warriors and everyone else, makes it a lot easier to kind of move past whatever happens between the Rockets and Spurs, because big picture, it didn't really change anything. This was not a year that you actually had a shot to win a title anyway. And then beyond that, in terms of the culture, that kind of stuff, it goes to show you that, well, it's about talent. And for the Rockets, who are trying to upgrade their team further, I think the opportunity to put good players around James Harden, I think that's a narrative you want to sell, that, hey, if you want to compete with the Warriors, the bar is so high that you probably need to team up with someone like James, as opposed to the San Antonio model, where if it's about culture and chemistry and coaching and all that kind of stuff, you know, you might see a wave around the league of players more willing to stay where they are, where they're comfortable, so to speak, and hope that no matter how unlikely, that they can be the next San Antonio. I think the Golden State model, as frustrating as it is to watch, because as a fan, it's not fun to watch blowout after blowout, but in terms of building a contender in Houston, I think that's probably the best result on multiple levels. In terms of free agents, as I said, it forces, I think, stars to come together more. And so if you have someone like James Harden in the prime of his career and a decent amount of cap room, that gives you some opportunities there. And then in terms of just the nitty-gritty of how it ended in Game 5 and Game 6 and mentally moving past the Spurs-Rockets series, in which Houston clearly had a chance to win it but let it slide, it's a lot easier, I think, to move past it if you just accept that, well, reality is that this was Golden State's year anyway, so big picture, other than advancing to the Western Conference Finals versus getting eliminated in the semis, it didn't really change much because this was Golden State's year no matter what. So as frustrating as it is for the Rockets, I think it's the best of the bad options, so to speak. So tip your hat to Golden State. Personally, I would still love to see Cleveland ultimately topple them in the finals. I think that would make for a lot more intrigue around the league. But in terms of the Warriors and the Spurs being the team the Rockets are in closest competition with in regards for second in the West, of course, their regional division rivals, all that kind of stuff, I think this was probably the best in game. And if Cleveland beats Golden State, I don't think it changes the overall narrative that you still need stars to team up to build a contender because, well, if Cleveland does it, well, they did it with LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love. So either way, you're looking at kind of a super team of all NBA talents winning out. You're not looking at the notion of a team with Patty Mills and Jonathan Simmons, guys like that, just magically stepping into bigger roles and somehow the culture winning above. That's the narrative that doesn't work out. No matter what now, whether it's Golden State or Cleveland, I know Boston's alive, but let's be real, Boston is done as well. It's going to be either Golden State or Cleveland. Either way, I think that's a narrative that the Rockets and GM Daryl Morey can sell. Now, looking forward to, well, guys, they might try and sell that narrative too. We know the Rockets are going to be trying to upgrade their roster this offseason, as they always are. There hasn't been a July since Daryl Morey came to Houston that he hasn't been in the hunt for big-name free agents, and I don't expect this year to be any different. And it's early to talk individual names because we're going to hear rumors throughout the next 5 weeks, still one more week in May and then all of June until July 1st gets here and free agency opens. If you want to hear specific targets, go back and listen to last Friday's episode if you haven't already with Brian Geltzeiler, aka Hoops Critic on Twitter. We did a lot of talk about individual possibilities for the Rockets, specifically Paul Millsap, Serge Ibaka, Danilo Gallinari. We threw out a lot of names, but it keeps coming back to the four spot and in terms of a place for the Rockets to upgrade, which is for a number of reasons. First, a pretty deep market in terms of forwards. I would say looking at all the positions, I would say the power forward market is probably the deepest there is. So it's where you have the biggest potential upgrades if you're the Rockets. And then beyond that, you look at the roster the Rockets have now. While Ryan Anderson is not a bad player, Ryan is an easily upgradable one because certainly he doesn't provide much on the defensive end of the floor with his fading athleticism. There's not much of a route to see him improving over the final 3 years of his contract. And if you look at some of the options like Millsap, Ibaka, Gallinari too, these are guys who still shoot very well, including from three. Now, they don't shoot quite Ryan Anderson well, but they shoot well enough that they still give you that three-point spacing, but they can give you a lot more versatility in terms of things they can do, other aspects of their game compared to Ryan. So I think that's going to come into focus as a spot the Rockets are looking to upgrade. They don't have to move Ryan Anderson to do it. I think that would be ideal because you could clear both salary cap room and minutes. Rather than trying to finesse Ryan into a backup role, you could just free up those minutes. You can also free up his nearly $20 million in annual salary. But they don't have to move Ryan to be active in free agency. They're sitting at about $11 to $12 million in cap room now. That's based on the salary cap projections. And, of course, you do have very friendly contracts, guys like Lou Williams, Trevor Ariza, if you needed it, that you could create some extra room. So while I think moving Ryan is probably the ideal role, because I don't think anyone is that bullish on the value of that contract moving forward, it just depends on if you can actually find a taker for that. If you can't, the Rockets are still going to have some possibilities. However, it does get a little trickier because at that point, you know, if you're looking in the power forward market, but then you move a Lou Williams, a Trevor Ariza, someone like that, well, then you might have the money, but then how are you going to fit the minutes and make all of that work? Because you're basically taking away minutes from either your guard rotation or small forward, and then the guy you're bringing in is essentially targeted as a power forward. So that's why Ryan, if you can move him, as Brian Geltzeiler said, is very possible. I was a little surprised to hear that, but Brian thinks that Ryan can be moved without too much difficulty. And I guess he makes a good point. The league is trying to play with more pace and space. Range shooting bigs are the wave of the future. So, and all it takes is one team. So there is a case that you can move him. And so not just from a financial standpoint, but also from a roster composition, how you're actually going to fit in these minutes. Because think about it. Right now, I know everyone says the Rockets had just a 7 or 8 man rotation, but that was artificially shortened. I think going forward, Daryl Morey said at the X interviews that they're going to try, of course, to find more minutes for Sam Decker and Montrezl Harrell. He singled out Decker, Harrell, and Capella as candidates for internal growth based on their age, and he's right on that. So really, you already had a full rotation, and then you also add in two guys, Decker and Harrell, who did play roles at various points throughout the year, and I think in theory they're going to improve, and you'd like them to play even more. So the Rockets do have a pretty full rotation of NBA-quality players, along with potential prospects that could be knocking at the door to earn even more minutes. So it's not as simple as just adding a new player from outside, and then all of a sudden you're going to have a role for them. No, you're probably going to need to clear out spots because right now you have, I would say, 10 players, assuming Nene resigns, and I think that's a safe bet. You're going to have 10 guys that are all expecting minutes. So you don't need to think of it just in terms of cap room. You also need to think in terms of where are these minutes going to come from, because the Rockets have a decent roster in terms of a depth of NBA contributors now. So that's why I think Ryan is the easiest, if you're looking at just a one-for-one trade, so to speak, create a little bit of cap room and then sign someone into that cap room. You really, if you're looking at those power forwards like Brian Geltzeiler throughout there, I think Ryan's the easiest way to make that work, not just financially, but from a minutes distribution standpoint as well. So stay tuned. I don't know if the Rockets would try and move Ryan in June. I had someone ask me about that on Twitter yesterday. I'm personally a little skeptical if they would look to move him on draft night, because the Rockets right now, for all the criticism they've gotten, they were the third best team in the NBA this year. And even if you want to say Cleveland's a little above based on their playoff performance, which I'll accept, then fine, they're the fourth best team in the NBA and the third best in the West. But there's a lot of value in that. And I don't think the Rockets are going to break up that core over a maybe. I don't think they're going to be willing to make a move in June just to say, well, we have this cap room, because then if you can't strike a deal with one of these guys, all of a sudden you got this cap room, no idea to spend it on, and you've taken a step back right in the prime of James Harden's career. So I do think they're open to moving Ryan. However, I think it would probably, if they did it, come in July rather than June. It would be once they are approaching, if not already have a verbal deal with someone, then you move that player, sort of like what happened with Jeremy Lin back in July of 2014. Now, I know ultimately that didn't work out because the Rockets did not finalize the deal with Chris Bosh, but it's like the deal you had done in June that year when they were trying to clear cap room was the Omer Asik trade, because that one, they got true value. That was the kind of deal, you get a first-round pick for Asik, you take that and run. So yeah, they did that in advance. The Jeremy Lin trade, where you're actually, they give up an asset to get rid of that contract, that took a little bit longer. That took until July, because you wanted to see that you got some traction with free agents before you really went too far down the road. And so I think that's what you'll see with Ryan Anderson if the Rockets do look to move him. I don't think it'd be in June. I think they'd wait until July. Maybe not until they have a verbal, but I think at least until discussions are down the road and you have a pretty good idea that there's a reasonable path to get someone to potentially replace some of those minutes. But we know that's the easy play. The easy is move Ryan Anderson, slide someone into his spot, and you can upgrade both from a math and a productivity standpoint. We all get that. The other thing is that, well, if that doesn't work, or if you want to make other upgrades beyond that, how do you create additional room? And the two guys, as I said leading off, that have been thrown out a lot are Lou Williams and Trevor Ariza. And the reason being, in the new NBA salary cap environment, those are highly desirable contracts. Guys that are making basically $7 million that are proven veterans, both expiring after 2018. Those are highly sought after. So if you need to create space, those are guys you can do it with. Now, they're both major contributors to the current team, so I don't think the Rockets are going to be looking to move them. But if they really want to make a big play and they need salary cap room, that's an avenue that you could look. And the more I think about it, those situations are going to be worth monitoring, because when you're talking about building a team long term, this is something that I haven't discussed since the end of the season, but you also have to look at not just free agents this year, but you have to look at your own free agents a year out. And as far as the Rockets and their significant rotation, there are three guys that are going to expire in July of 2018, those being obviously Ariza and Lou Williams, and also Clint Capella, because next year is going to be the fourth year of his rookie contract. Now, Capella, I don't think there are any long-term questions with him. We'll see if they actually do an extension. In the past, Daryl Morey has not really done many extensions with his rookies. He's preferred to let it play out. Of course, with it being just his second contract, he would be a restricted free agent. So I think the odds are good that you can keep Capella no matter what. If both sides can come to an acceptable figure, I do think they'd be open to giving him an extension, but odds are he'll probably wait until next summer. But the bottom line is Clint Capella is your starting center. The Rockets are very bullish on him. He's essentially just played 2 years in the NBA, barely played at all as a rookie. He continues to improve. Thought he had a very quality playoff run late in the Oklahoma City series, and then was outstanding against San Antonio. We heard Daryl Morey say in the exit interviews that he thinks Clint can become a borderline all-star level player given his skill set in the NBA. And so when you have a player like that at your starting center, he's very young, still continuing to improve. I don't want to say the Rockets are 100% set at center. If something better came available, no matter what position it is, you know Joe Murray's going to consider it. But I don't think they're looking to upgrade that spot. I think big picture, the odds are that they are going to come to a deal, whether it be an extension or more likely next summer, to re-sign Clint Capella. He's a big part of the future. He's a big part of their interior presence now. He's not a perfect player, but unless someone else just offers him an insane, crazy deal, I think the odds are pretty good that Clint Capella is going to be capped. He is, of course, going to get a big pay raise, but that's just how it goes when you're going from a rookie contract to the next. The more interesting players in there are Ariza and Lou, and here's why. They both have contracts that are dramatically underpaid for their roles in the current NBA. You look at Ariza. Now, I know Ariza's a little bit older. He'll be 32 this season, actually 33 on his next contract. There has been a little bit of slippage defensively, but overall, he's still a very quality player, very capable of starting in the NBA. And then Lou Williams already comes off the bench, but certainly the productivity is equal to, at worst, an average starter. This is a guy who absolutely can play a role, both of them, on winning teams in the NBA. So $7 million a year, I don't think that's going to cut it in this new salary cap environment. I think both of those guys, now with them each being on the other side of 30 on their next deal, will they really command long-term? Can they get a four-year contract? I don't know. But certainly they're going to be paid a lot more than $7 million. I would say to get that kind of productivity, you're going to be looking bare minimum, I would think, of about 10 and maybe closer to 12, because in the current salary cap environment for players with that kind of consistent production, no real injury issues, a guy that you can plug in as a quality starting caliber player for 25 to 30 minutes a night in the current cap environment, that's a $10 to $12 million a year player. And I don't think the Rockets would 100% balk at that because, again, for the Rockets right now and moving forward, we know Daryl Morey's philosophy. It's not so much about having cap room. It's about having cap flexibility. It's about, is this player a positive or negative trade asset? And perhaps with one exception, that one exception being Ryan Anderson, and we all know why, the Rockets were in a unique spot last offseason where they had to get someone to say yes. It was just a matter of changing the perception of the franchise. And of course, Ryan Anderson coming also led to Eric Gordon, also played a role in James Harden renegotiating and extending his contract. So there were several dominoes there. But with that one exception, and Anderson being a big, and bigs tend to get overpaid in general, generally you've seen Daryl Morey use an approach that, again, it's not about cap room, it's about cap flexibility. And generally, he's done very well at it. That's why the Rockets have so many team-friendly contracts. Again, Ariza, Lou, although the Rockets didn't negotiate Lou's contract, they did trade for it. Pat Beverly, even Eric Gordon in the new salary cap environment, somebody that's making between $12 and $14 million for his production, that's a good deal. So, again, even though the numbers sound like a lot and they are a big percentage increase, I don't think the Rockets would 100% balk. However, I also don't think they're going to keep them at any cost because, first off, you could have a team, even if the numbers are reasonable, like, say, $10 to $12 million a year, as I threw out, you could see someone desperate throw out a four-year contract. And in the case of Ariza, that would be keeping him through his age 36 season. And is that a fair bet, especially considering that we know the NBA salary cap is actually going to decline somewhat in the years ahead when we project out to 2018, 2019, according to the latest projections? I don't know that that's wise. So when you're the Rockets, as they enter July 2017, they've got to consider those factors because realistically, this is the last time you can get value for those players if they are going to potentially leave for zero compensation. Now, again, I'm not saying they are. I could see a path for both of those guys sticking long-term. But you have to factor in the risk, and it doesn't make it an easy decision to send them out. It's just something that the Rockets are going to have to consider. Because the reality of this, in an era of NBA super teams like Golden State and Cleveland, the trade deadline is becoming increasingly more difficult to sell at, because there are so few true buyers. You're not really seeing that many teams that are willing to take the plunge for someone like, say, Lou Williams. I'll use him as an example. The Lakers sold him at the deadline, and even though he had insane numbers on a very reasonable contract, the Rockets were able to get him for a relatively low cost and extremely late first-round pick. And I think in past years, you might have seen teams all the way up to the middle of the first round willing to get a guy like that. But no one was, because with the bar as high as Golden State and Cleveland have it these days, you don't have as many buyers. So I don't think you can wait and say, well, we'll feel it out, and then if it doesn't work out, we'll trade them at the deadline and instead of potentially losing them for nothing at summer. It doesn't really work that way. We actually saw that a lot with the Rockets in the 2015-2016 season when they were 41-41, the last year that Dwight was in Houston. The Rockets knew by the deadline that that team was not really working. They were very active. However, they couldn't really come to any major deals because there weren't really buyers for those established veterans. Now, if you're selling a true star-level player, yes, you can do that at the deadline. There's always a market for actual star-level contributions because that can change the narrative of a franchise. However, when you're trying to sell basically veteran parts, which are what guys like Trevor Ariza and Lou Williams are, it's very rare in today's NBA that you have a team in February, especially if it's an expiring contract, willing to say, you know what, I'm going to take the plunge for those guys. Generally, the bar is so high these days, not only will they not give up real value for them, they might not even take them just in the salary cap space. They might prefer just to play their young players. There's a reason the Rockets weren't able to make those big deals in February 2016. There's a reason Lou came so cheaply in February 2017. You can't really look to do deals like that at the deadline. If you are going to move veteran pieces like that, there is a market. In my opinion, you've got to do it in July. Because at that point, you're trying to... every NBA team is trying to build a long-term future. they're more willing to take gambles on veterans. Even if it doesn't necessarily make sense for their current situations, they might say, hey, we bring a veteran like Trevor Ariza into our clubhouse. Of course, he'd be under contract for a full season. Let's see what happens, because you'd have him all the way through training camp, the full season, all that sort of stuff. And beyond that, optimism is higher for everyone in July. That's just the way it is. You might see mid-tier teams that are willing to say, hey, maybe we can catch lightning in a bottle. We get that perfect chemistry, the way things worked out so well for Utah this year. Let's use one example, something like that. We bring in some more veterans, the way that Utah brought in a Boris Diaw, someone like that. You can find teams that are willing to make that gamble in July. You're not going to find them willing to make that gamble in February. And how that plays into Trevor Ariza and Lou Williams situations is that they're free agents in July 2018, and if you want to potentially get something for them without letting them leave for no compensation, the time to do it is in July 2017. It's not next February, because the market is not going to be there. You're certainly not going to get assets, and you might not be able to move them at all. And then there's another layer to consider, too. If you trade someone like that, and the Rockets, of course, we all expect them to be at bare minimum an upper-tier playoff team next year, hopefully a contender, depending on what moves they make. But yeah, if you move someone like Trevor Ariza or Lou at the deadline, essentially just to get a little bit of compensation, even if you could, then I think there's a blowback from the current locker room that 2 months before the playoffs, you're essentially disrupting from that core. So on every level, it makes more sense to move those guys in the offseason rather than during the season. Now, will the Rockets do it? I don't think it would come easily. I don't think they'll move them just to move them, because certainly they do play key roles on this team. Also, there is a path where, yeah, maybe they can re-sign those guys to positive value deals, and even if they both get raises, which I think they would, into the $10 to $12 million range, as long as the contracts have a positive net trade value, then it wouldn't necessarily be a huge hindrance to the Rockets moving forward, because, well, they could always trade the deal if they needed. But you can't control the market. What if someone goes in and offers one of those guys, say, 4 years, $50 million? In the case of Trevor Ariza, that's paying him, you know, $13, $14 million in his age 36 season down in 2020 or 2021, whenever it is. Also, when the NBA salary cap is projected to decline a little bit. All of a sudden, that does not look like a good deal. And if you're the Rockets, a team that is not a finished product, no matter what the Rockets do, I don't think they're going to be in a position where you say they are all in. These days, with teams like the Warriors, no one is all in. You've got to be as cutthroat as possible. You've always got to maintain flexibility to keep getting better, because if you want to contend for a title with the bar this high, the work never stops. You've always got to have options. So as it pertains to Trevor and Lou, you know, if you're Daryl Morey, that there is a risk in July 2018, depending on what the market does, that you could lose those guys for no compensation. Now, again, it doesn't make it automatic to trade them, because they have key roles on next year's team. Right now, they're each projected to play at least 25 minutes per game. They're veterans. They're proven in this league. They're proven in Mike D'Antoni's system. Each played fairly well in the playoffs, had key moments for you. So none of this is to say, well, you move them just to move them. But you have to consider that risk in the back of your mind. I don't know if the odds are 50-50, 25-75, 75-25, whatever they may be, that one or both of those guys gets offers that the Rockets think are not in their best interest in July 2018, but there is a possibility. And so if the Rockets are on the fence about exactly who to move to create salary cap space, or if they're just trying to determine, well, should we make a move at this position or not, I do think that's something that is going to be considered in the back of Daryl Morey's mind, because these days, because of the dynamics, because of how difficult it is to sell at the trade deadline, you essentially have to think a year out. Every July, you don't just look at who your free agents are now and who you're going after. You have to also look and say, hey, who are the guys that are going to be up in a year? Because this is probably my last chance to do something with those contracts, to make them a positive asset. And so to basically sum up, I know we've looked at a lot of layers of this, but I think that's why Lou and Trevor might be a little more movable than folks around the league think, because that risk factor in July 2018 is going to have to be taken into account. It's not a slam dunk. If you can't get good value, if you don't have someone else on the other end of the line that's willing to say yes, then you don't move them just to move them, certainly. But it's something if you do have a potential replacement, especially if it's one that you can provide a little more long-term certainty in regards to their contract situation, it is something that I think you would consider. Now, in terms of potential options to fill those, guys, I don't know. I get asked all the time, potential options. We've gone over the free agents in terms of trades. It's pointless to speculate because there are so many options out there that we don't even know about yet. It's all whatever goes on, Daryl Morey's text messages, emails, phone calls. The vast majority of the names are on the market. We'll never know until a deal is actually close to fruition. That's how it generally goes. One name I do want to throw out there very briefly before we wrap up this podcast, and I do think it ties into Lou Williams, Sergio Yule. I know Rockets fans hate that name. I know a lot of folks have heard him say that, well, I'm happy with Real Madrid staying in Spain. I think everyone knows Sergio Yule. For those who don't, he's probably the best player in the world, not in the NBA, star guard over in Spain. Was just named MVP of the EuroLeague. He's won multiple titles over there. Excellent player. He plays point guard, although he's really a combo guard. If theoretically he could come, and I don't think it's impossible, no matter what people say, I know there's a lot of fatigue over hearing that name in Houston. Realistically, the Rockets have only gone after Yule one time. That was in July 2015, and they were going after him, basically offering him back then the mid-level exception. That was close to $6 million a year for 4 years, and he chose to stay in Spain. First off, he was 28 back then. There was more time for him to join the NBA going forward. But beyond that, that was his first year, I would say, of true stardom. I think that was the first year that he won a ring. That was the first time that he was legitimately one of the best players in the league. And yeah, maybe he wanted to go back and enjoy that some more and prove it. The Rockets did not really go after him in July 2016 because it didn't make sense. The Rockets, the way they were last year, you're coming up at 41-41. No matter what, someone like Yule is a little bit of a risk. He hasn't played in the NBA. And last year, the Rockets could not take that risk. They had to get proven production. So they used their cap room every bit of it. Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon, and extending James Harden. They were not in a point to take the risk because the team had too many deficiencies. They just had to go out and get the best proven players they could. So Yule, even if you were willing to come, I don't think the Rockets were really exploring it last offseason. It just didn't make sense for the cap space. Right now, it potentially could. This is the kind of team where you might gamble on the upside of someone like that. Now, there's no role for him now. I think to get him out of Spain, he's clearly pretty comfortable where he is right now. You'd have to offer him a role. And right now, between James Harden, Pat Beverly, Eric Gordon, Lou Williams, the Rockets have one of the better and deeper backcourts in the entire NBA. So there's not a role. I think you'd have to promise him at least, you know, an obvious path to 25 or more minutes per game. And right now, there's just not that availability. But to tie into what we've just been discussing, if you move Lou Williams, that's just one example, all of a sudden, there is a path. And I am intrigued by Yule from a basketball standpoint, because to me, he brings a style of, I call it bulldog physicality. That's what I came up with the other day. He's got a nasty streak. Also, he has a desire to kind of have the ball in his hands in big moments. All those things, those little intangibles, are attributes that the Rockets don't really have right now. They have a lot of shooters. They have a lot of guys who are very efficient, but what I want to see is when the offense breaks down, when things get out of sorts the way they were at times in that San Antonio series, who can just make a play one-on-one, go into the rim, just make something happen off the dribble, create, break down the defense. And right now, the Rockets, for all the shooting they have, I think I'd like to see them be a little more versatile. And to me, Yule is a little bit more of a throwback. If I wanted a modern comparison, there aren't too many like him because generally the league is trending faster, more shooting, smaller, that sort of thing. He actually reminds me a tiny bit of Marcus Smart. Now, I don't think he has quite the all-around game that Smart does, but from a standpoint of Smart, someone in Boston who he doesn't shoot the three that well, but he's so physical, he's such a bulldog, and he sees the floor so well, good leader in addition to that, that even though he's kind of an average shooter, now Yule's a little bit above average shooter, but he's certainly not elite like some of the current Rockets are, but he brings a lot of skills to the table. Whereas now I feel like a lot of the Rockets on the perimeter, there are a lot of duplicate skill sets. Lou Williams and Eric Gordon, they're both good players, but there are a lot of similarities. Whereas if you have one of those guys and Sergio Yule, you have a more versatility in skill sets, which I think can make you less prone to break down at a given point the way the Rockets did at certain points this year, specifically in Game 5 and Game 6 against San Antonio. If you have more diversity in terms of approach, then I think you're less predictable, and because you're less predictable, less prone to going into a specific tailspin at any particular point. Now, in terms of getting him here, the good news for the Rockets in terms of going after Yule would be that they're the only team that has his rights, so no one else is bidding. The flip side is that, well, Yule and his agent, it's pretty clear he's comfortable in Spain, so he's not going to come easily. And he turned down an offer of $6 million a year 2 years ago, and that was before the explosion in salaries. So I think even without competition, you have to offer him, I'd say, my guess is at least $10 million a year, given his production, to get him to think about it. But if you did, I do think he would think about it. Is it a lock? No, but there are some reasons. First off, as I said, they didn't really go after him in 2016, and before 2015, it was clear he wasn't really ready for the NBA. They've only gone after him one time, so even though he's been technically property of the Rockets since, what, 2009, they've only really seriously gone after him and rejected one time. People make it into a bigger deal than it is because there are certain years here people throw it out as a hypothetical, but there's really only been one true failed pursuit, in my opinion. The other years, it just didn't really make sense. The other thing is the age. Folks, Yule is going to be 30 later this year. And if you don't make it the move by now, he's never going to make it. The history of guys who don't come over until their mid-30s, you're looking at guys like Pablo Prigioni, who I know Pablo had some great moments with the Rockets, specifically Game 7. But by and large, those are cup of coffee. They never got a chance to be a true contributor in the NBA because by the time they came over, it was far too late in their careers. If Yule is going to do it, this is the time for him to do it. And beyond that, it's not just a matter of him athletically not being able to handle it if he waits till his mid-30s. Also, financially, if you wait until your 30s, he's not going to get a big deal, the kind of numbers we're talking about, like $10 million a year or something like that. This might be the last chance for him to do it. And in 2015, maybe he wasn't ready because you can say, hey, I'm still going to be 29, going to be 30. The salary cap's going to go up. I'll still be in the prime of my career. Whereas now, this really is his last chance, in my opinion, to get a big money deal in the NBA. Other than this year, the Rockets are going to hold his rights no matter what. It's not like he can really negotiate a release to another team. This is his chance. Otherwise, his game's going to decline a little bit. The salary cap's also going to decline a little bit, as we discussed earlier. Also, I do think, just from a competitive standpoint, there's something to be said for not having anything to prove. I could see after year one of finally getting to elite level, which he was in 2015, of saying, hey, you know what? Let's run it back. It's kind of like the Florida Gators, that team in like 2007 with Al Horford, Corey Brewer, all those NBA prospects who won the title and then decided jointly to go back to school when I think it was their sophomore year. Some were sophomores, some were juniors for a second year. Say, hey, let's run it back. And they did. But if you notice, they didn't stay for a third year. That's because, yeah, it's fun to run it back. It's fun to prove that you can back up, that you're a dynasty. But at that point, when you've won essentially all these consecutive rings, you've been the best player in Europe for 3 years running, I don't know what there is to prove anymore. Now, I don't think it's going to be easy. I think on some level, he's happy there, and he could stay. But from a competitive standpoint, whereas a couple of years ago, you do something 1 year, then yeah, maybe you say, okay, I want to keep going at it and proving that that I can do this. This is fun. However, from a competitive standpoint, after 3 years, when it's pretty well proven that you've done all that you can do, that you are the best there is, maybe it is time for a new challenge. So that's why I do think it's a little different than it was in July 2015. So as I look at the Yule situation, three things come to mind as being different in July 2017 than July 2015. First, his age. If he doesn't take the deal now, I don't know when he will. So I think there's a little more urgency, no matter what he says publicly, to get a deal done. Secondly, from a competitive standpoint, I think it's pretty clear that he's accomplished all that he really can over there. And then from an NBA standpoint, Rockets are a proven team with a system that's pretty good for guards, and with the NBA salary cap exploding, this is the highest that cap is going to be. So in terms of having a team with money to spend, having overall money available, this is as good as it gets in terms of time for him to make the move. Does all of that make it likely that he will do that? No. All I'm saying is that it's possible, and it's something the Rockets, I'm sure they're going to feel out his agent, are going to discuss. Now, yes, I'm aware he's made statements that he's happy there, and that, well, he's not anticipating a move to the NBA, he signed a contract, blah, blah, blah. Guys, that's BS. You can't take any of those statements at face value. Every player under contract is happy because it's a contract. That's all you can really say. The flip side, of course, we talk about all these names for the Rockets, and I know there are going to be quotes throughout the offseason. Anytime Daryl Morey gives a media availability, he's going to say that, well, I'm happy with this group. They won 55 games. Well, because until a deal is done, those guys are under contract. Those are your players. In the case of Yule, that's your team. There's no point in burning that bridge. If you're under contract, you're going to say you're happy until that other deal is done. Now, there are a few rare exceptions. If you're really trying to bully your way out, maybe you can say a few bad things to whoever your contractual employer is. But I think that's pretty clearly an exception to the rule. By and large, contracts mean that you're just going to have sunshine and rainbows in terms of approach to the media. So, yes, I know Yule said he's happy there. And I know in terms of some of these changes, we're talking about potentially with the Rockets. I know Daryl Morey said they're pretty happy with the roster and they got all their contract. That's just something you say. You can't take any real indication out of what those public quotes are, because when you're dealing with a contract, well, unless something changes, you're going to suit up for that team. So why are you trying to create any adversity over something that's a maybe? So I know what Yule's public statements have been, but I don't really take them seriously. They might be true. They also might not. A lot of it's just posturing. And so any public statements, to me, they don't mean a lot. You've got to wait and see what happens behind the scenes. And by the way, before I end this podcast, one more rumor. You probably saw me go off on this on Twitter the other day, but I want to throw out there, since we've talked a little about overall free agency parameters. In addition to not expecting criticism with situations of players under contract, I would also say another thing to keep in mind over the next month: don't expect truth and honesty from teams around the league with regards to their own players entering free agency. And I had a rant on Twitter the other day about Serge Ibaka, because after I talked about him a lot with Brian Geltzler on my last podcast, there was a rumor from, I think, Basketball Insiders that Ibaka and the Raptors had already basically agreed to a new contract, which, first off, I don't buy on a number of levels. I don't buy that it makes sense for Ibaka, because when it gets to July 1st, why would you, unless you're a max player, maybe if you're a max player, I could see basically agreeing to a contract, because you know what your salaries are. You're not going to get more money. Whereas if you're not a max player, why in the world would you agree? Even if you want to stay, then you want to get other offers around the league. Maybe you can get a little bit more money. And agents know this more than anyone. So I don't think it makes sense for Ibaka to do that. Also, if you're Toronto, if you lose Kyle Lowry, which is seeming increasingly possible, why would you sign someone like Serge Ibaka in the prime of his career? That's a classic mediocrity treadmill move, to give someone like Ibaka $20 million a year if you lose Lowry. If you lose Lowry, as Brian said on my show a few days ago, the obvious move is to take a step back. So, yeah, a lot of reasons I don't see that making sense. However, I know that rumor is out there. I don't think Steve Kuyler is making it up. However, what tends to happen in these situations, teams put out a confident vibe and it's just posturing to try and discourage the market. It's the same way with restricted free agent. You hear these teams say, well, we'll match any offer. Yeah, the reason you do that is because you want to say, hey, it's a waste of time to go after my guy, so why don't you just go after other guys? Because, yes, timing matters. I'll go back to July 2014, who you prioritize, who you actually make an offer to, means something in NBA free agency. Back in July 2014, I think it was pretty clear that Kyle Lowry, speaking of the Raptors, was very open to coming to Houston. He met with the Rockets. However, the Rockets had bigger plans for their money. They didn't give him an offer he could accept because they were going after Carmelo Anthony and Chris Bosh. And rather than wait around and play that game, Lowry ended up re-signing with Toronto. So, yes, it matters. Teams can't just say, well, even if a player, we're probably not going to get him, we're going to go after him. No, you have to consider who you're taking your time with on July 1st, July 2nd, because things move very quickly. And so if you're wasting time on a guy that has only a very small chance of coming, that's not good. And the flip side of this, teams know that. So teams with restricted free agents or their own free agents that they want to keep, they're going to do everything they can to put out the impression that, hey, if they're restricted, we're going to match any offer. And, well, if they're our own player, then we're going to re-sign them. We basically already have a deal, because you want to discourage that market. But if you are a fan, you have to realize that dynamic and say, hey, it doesn't make sense for the player, because unless the player is already at a max level, they probably want to get every cent that they can get on the open market. And from a team standpoint, it may not make sense for the team if the Raptors lose Lowry. So for a lot of reasons, I don't buy that. All I'm telling you guys as fans, you're going to see a lot of those stories over the next month. Take it with a grain of salt. I don't think that's truly indicative of what's going on. I don't think they're, other than maybe in the case of a max free agent like Chris Paul and the Clippers, maybe I'd believe that if there's a leak. But in terms of someone like Serge Ibaka that's not at max level, it doesn't make sense on any level to basically agree to a deal before July 1st, before NBA free agency starts, and they can take offers from around the league. I know you're going to hear some reports, but just wanted to throw that out there. Just like the contract talk with someone like Sergio Yul or, say, Daryl Morey with regards to his players, there's a lot of posturing that goes on, and it's fine. It's not the end of the world. It's something you have to say, but as fans, you can't take it at face value. Just keep that context in the back of your mind. Anyway, to sum everything up and bring it full circle, there's not room for his Sergio Yul now, and you're also not going to hear anything from him. Well, even if he was interested, there's not really a role for him the way it's set up right now. The Rockets do have $11, $12 million in cap room. However, the guard spots aren't really where they would upgrade if they're just going to make one move and be done. Clearly, the forward spots, obviously Ariza, there's an age issue, Ryan Anderson, there's effectiveness, age, and contract issue. Those are probably the most reasonable places to look to upgrade, and fortunately, those are also very loaded places in free agency. However, where you could have all of this kind of merged together is that if, instead of just having to create cap room by any means necessary and then sign the best player available, if you are able to move Ryan Anderson's contract and basically sign a new player into that, then potentially you could look at maybe reconfiguring your guard rotation a little bit if you're able to resolve the forward conundrum without dipping into your trade assets, then maybe, your trade assets aside from Ryan Anderson, I mean, then maybe you can say, well, I move Lou because maybe there's some duplicated skills and there's the uncertainty with his contract expiring next July, and maybe we can get Sergio Yul into that slot and have a little bit more diverse fit from a basketball skill standpoint, but more importantly, because I'm assuming you'd be signing Yul for multiple years, obviously, you're not going to sign him on a one-year deal, you would also have a little bit more long-term financial certainty, whereas with Lou, there's that question, same with the reason of what happens in July 2018. Maybe if you can replace that with a Yul, both in terms of fit on the basketball floor and fit on your salary cap books, maybe that makes a little bit of sense. It's tough to really see that working out right now because, again, you're only at $11 million. If you want to bring in any player of significance, you're probably looking at close to $20 million. And if you spend all of that just based on what you have now and moving Lou, there's not going to be room for Yul on top of it. But maybe this stuff can become interconnected in that if you're able to upgrade one of the forward spots by moving Ryan Anderson's contract, then all of a sudden you might still can bring in another free agent by moving someone like Lou or Ariza. And again, I know they're contributors, but the theme of this entire show, think about July 2018, because July 2017 is probably when you need to really take a hard look, because if you wait until the deadline, well, folks, given the current NBA, it's going to be too late. So anyway, I will leave it there. Appreciate you guys, as always, for tuning in. I know this has been kind of a long podcast, but a lot of areas I wanted to explore. I know we spent the first couple of offseason episodes looking at free agents, which I know is the sexy thing to do in terms of specific names, who might they can upgrade. The tougher thing, what I do here, it takes a little bit more time, is saying, okay, what are the strategies they can do to actually clear room, both from a roster and salary cap standpoint, to make the numbers work, to go after someone like a Millsap or Ibaka or Danilo Gallinari or a Gordon Hayward, who I didn't talk about with Brian, but certainly I think we all know that Daryl Morey would have interest. If the interest is reciprocal from Gordon, we'll have to wait and see. But it's tougher to figure out the routes they might go to do that. And, well, also beyond that, there's that name Sergio Yul that I know everyone hates. But yes, it's out there again. And under the right conditions, I could see it being a fit, both from a salary cap standpoint and a fit in terms of a guard in Mike D'Antoni's offense and what the current Rockets need. So best thing I can tell you is stay tuned, but hopefully this podcast gave you a little bit of an overall guide as to how the Rockets might approach it. Anyway, for now, I will wrap things there. Again, this is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Follow me on Twitter, at Ben Dubose. Follow the show on Twitter, at Locked On Rockets. Also, email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Any advertising inquiries, questions, suggestions, anything we can do to make this a better show, don't hesitate to reach out. Also, subscribe to us if you haven't already. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom, TuneIn, pretty much wherever you search for podcasts, search for Locked On Rockets, and we should be there. There's also shows across the Locked On Podcast Network, every NBA and NFL team. The Texans are geared up. They've got their rookie camp going on this week, getting ready for mini camp and then training camp in just a couple of months. So if you want to hear about them, Locked On Texans, hosted by my buddy Robert Lynn. Feel free to search for them on any of those aforementioned networks. Just you can search for Locked On Rockets, search for Locked On Texans, or search for, well, any team across the NBA and NFL, and of course the national shows Locked On NBA and Locked On NFL. Really a ton of great content across this Locked On Podcast Network. I know all of us have a little more time on our hands with the regular season ending and the playoffs ending too, and no more Rockets games, but well, if you've got time to fill, the Locked On Podcast Network certainly has good content that hopefully you can enjoy. So for now, I'll go out and enjoy the rest of my Tuesday. I hope you guys do the same, and I'll be back before the end of the week with a more interview-focused show in which we probably turn back our attention a little bit more to specific free agent targets out there and some of the forward-looking plans, the guys you might see the Rockets calling up come July 1st, which is now just 5 short weeks away.